You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcasting from First Virginia Community Bank. This is your host, Herb Cohn, with my co-hosts, LaDonna Simon, First Virginia Community Bank, Fred Press, Fress Dozier in Hamelburg, and Richard McBride, McBride Real Estate Services. We have a great lineup of guests for you in our show today, including Matthew Lesko, CEO of Lesko, Steve Omick, Riverside Research Institute. Mike, how do you pronounce your last name?
Kapitanovich.
President of LMO and Jamie Hamelburg, co-managing partner of Press Dozier and Hamelburg. Let's get to our first guest, Matthew Lesko, CEO of Lesko and Walderman. Matthew, what is Lesko and Walderman?
Lesko and Walderman is an outsourced accounting firm specializing in technology automation and process development.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What are you talking about?
Bookkeeping, CFO services, controller services, but focused on automating the data entry portion of accounting in the back office.
And how large or how small is this organization?
We have a little over 30 people.
A little over 30 people. Where are you from originally?
So I was born in South Africa, but I grew up in PG County in Cheverly, Maryland.
Why did you move from South Africa to the United States?
Well, my father was in South Africa organizing unions against apartheid in the late 70s. He had an aortic aneurysm in 1986 and was brought back here for medical attention.
Interesting. So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm an only child.
So you were 3 years old when you came to the United States with Dad, who had a medical issue. And what ended up happening? What was that all about? How'd that affect you?
Well, you know, the aortic aneurysm made him handicapped, and he was in a coma when he first came back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
From there, in my early childhood, he was bound to a wheelchair, and then was able to basically get the strength to walk with braces and canes and go to work and take the metro.
So you saw Dad persist. I mean, like
persevere.
Uh-huh. And so the neighborhood you grew up in, what kind of neighborhood was it?
It was a very nice neighborhood. It was a small-knit community. It's sort of backed up against.
Yeah, but you also told me you got bullied as a kid. What was that all about?
Well, that was in school. I went to a tag school in which there was just a few white kids in my school or in my class. And
what'd you learn from being bullied?
How to deal with adversity.
Well, how's that helped you in business?
Well, it's helped me, you know, get hit, you know, in the butt, and be able to bounce back from it to understand that tomorrow's another day.
Mm-hmm. So, how young were you when you started making money?
I don't remember not making money. 7, 8 years old.
Doing what?
You know, at first was, you know, lawn care services.
Whose idea was it?
That was my idea. We only had 20 or so.
What do you mean only? Only had what? You had only had 20 lawns you were mowing?
Only 20 lawns, one or two churches.
Uh-huh. So this was your idea, and did you get anybody else involved with this idea?
A couple friends.
Uh-huh. And what was their role versus what was your role?
Well, I sort of got the clients and organized when we would do the work. They sort of just helped me with the work.
Uh-huh. What's that have to do with your current business?
Well, I think that, you know, it helped me. It taught me just the general approach to business.
You know, what are you talking about? What do you mean?
Going out and getting clients, going out and managing people.
Interesting. Richard, what kind of questions you got?
How did the insight of watching your dad struggle help you grow and change yourself?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, as a child, you didn't really think any differently from your father than anybody else's father. I think it was more subconscious. From my perspective, you know, I saw a father that still threw the football with me, still was a big part of my life. But to see what he struggled with from a physical challenges and, you know, the pain that he suffered on a daily basis, it made it hard for me to have excuses myself.
Right. We also saw him go from a coma to a wheelchair to a walker, and that's a real transformation of someone's physical being. What physical transformation or what other, you know, transformations did that inspire you to make?
Well, I just want to say it wasn't a walker.
Braces and canes.
You know, for me, you know, my changes obviously weren't physical. They were more within the business. But I knew that, you know, don't ever be afraid of change. Change is good. If something isn't working, be quick to make a difference.
So how have you reinvented your own self?
Well, there's the first 5 years and everything after when it comes to my business. My business, I was 23 when I started it. I had no idea what I was doing. Made a lot of mistakes, a lot of failures. I started off trying to be like every other accounting firm. Accounting and consulting firms have a third mentality, is what it's called, in which basically you pay a third of your billable rate to your staff. Well, I wasn't hiring very good staff. So I changed the model to a 50-50, and I was able to hire better staff, and it really made a big difference in my company.
Mm-hmm. Fred, what are you thinking?
So, being an only child in a three-person household with a handicapped father, being bullied in school, obviously you've learned to deal with adversity. But how is that translated into dealing? You said you had a lot of successes and failures. How has it helped you to overcome the adversity in business?
Well, so as an only child and with parents that had friends that mostly didn't have children, you were really put in situations in which you had to be probably more mature than your age. I think it also made you have to be able to really be able to talk to people on a different level. So for me, it's always helped me talk to people that are older than me, people that have more education than me. One of the big beliefs that I have is hire smarter than yourself. If you want to manage people that have, higher degrees than you, that have more education and more experience, you better be able to have their respect as well.
Mm-hmm. LaDonna, what are you thinking?
I heard you talk about, your dad and some of your experiences. I'm curious to just hear a little bit more about your mom and how growing up with your mom kind of tailored you into the man you are today.
My mother had great influence on me. Obviously, my dad traveled a lot when I was a kid as well, which might be surprising that he was handicapped, but a lot of my time was spent with my mother, and my mother provided a very grounded moral background. My mother is also a ceramicist and sculptor in the area. That was her main profession, and we spent a lot of time together. When I lived in Paris, my dad went there 6 months before we did, and so it was me and my mother that were here.
Weren't you doing some business stuff with your mom?
I don't do business things.
Well, when you did, but you were doing some home sales or something.
Well, my mother had an annual home show, in which people in the neighborhood and friends and family would come to purchase pottery and ceramics.
And what was your role in that?
Cash register guy.
So, mom asked you to. Well, you were doing more than the cash register, weren't you? How young were you?
I remember it from when I was a little kid, from the first time I can remember one of the home shows. It was doing the register, it was taking the money, it was giving the change, it was greeting people at the door, it was putting food out, whatever I was asked to do.
What did you learn from helping your mother do those home shows where she was selling her ceramics? What did you learn from that helps you build this organization known as Lesko and Walderman?
Well, it's the social aspect. It's the customer service aspect. It's having it's bringing people into your home, making them feel welcome. And not only is it just a home show in which you're selling pottery, but we had wine and beer and beverages and food and really making it more of a social gathering.
Your mom had a pretty big influence. It sounded to me that your dad also had a major influence. Is that aware of your success?
My father passed away in 2007. I believe that he is aware. I started my business, or I really came up with the idea, in 2006, and he passed away within the year of me starting the business, before the year. I think that he was very proud of me. And
assuming Dad's looking down now, how do you think he would feel?
I think he'd be very happy.
Why?
Well, he was always supportive of me, and I think I've taken some of the things that he fought for through unions and brought it into my own business.
Like what kind of stuff?
Benefits. Since the day I started, I offered health, dental. We currently offer life and long-term disability, retirement.
Why do you do that stuff? That's expensive.
It's expensive, but it isn't. If you build your business model the right way, if you explain to your staff exactly why you pay the way you pay, and you build it into it, it's not just about being expensive or providing the benefits. It's providing people the ability to survive through their retirement age.
So where'd that come from? Your dad?
Well, that's a union. He organized unions in New England. He really believed in making sure that there was fair wages.
So are you more like your mom or your dad?
That's a mix.
What do you mean?
Well, I think I don't really know where I got the entrepreneurial spirit. I think when I told my parents I was going to start a business, they went, what?
Yeah, it sounds like your mom was doing it, though.
But she didn't really consider hers a business. She never really made money.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they're always supportive. From my mother's standpoint, you know, I think she's the one, I tell her to this day that she's the one that made me an accountant.
Uh-huh. And your dad, what'd you get from your dad?
Analytics, strategic competitiveness.
Mm-hmm. And the persistence or the perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
What's the website address for this organization?
L-W consulting.com.
Let me have that one more time.
L-W consulting.com.
Uh-huh. We've been speaking with Matthew Lesko, CEO of Lesko & Waldeman. What's the best part of your day?
Waking up.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
It's a new day.
Mm-hmm. So you look forward to your day.
Oh, it brings challenges, and uh-huh. You have the opportunity to change.
Uh-huh. What's the website address one last time?
L-W consulting.com.
You've been speaking with Matthew Lesko, CEO of Lesko & Waldeman, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Nice interview. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Steve Omick, who's the CEO of Riverside Research Institute. Steve, what is Riverside Research Institute?
Riverside is a high-tech, non-for-profit that is really dedicated to providing engineering services to the Department of Defense and uh-huh. The intelligence community.
How large or how small is this organization?
We're just a little shy of 500 employees.
Wow. Where are you from originally?
Iowa City.
Uh-huh. Iowa City. And how many brothers and sisters? Where are you? How many brothers and sisters are? Where are you in the pecking order?
I'm the fourth of five.
You're the fourth of five.
Two brothers, two sisters.
So what was it like around the dinner table?
It was competitive.
Uh-huh. But on the other hand, you also told me you have close relationships with everybody.
I do. All of my brothers and sisters and I are very close together.
So on one hand, it was competitive. On the other hand, it's intimate and close.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. How's that play out in your work environment today?
Kind of the same way. I mean, I'm very competitive by nature, and I work well with the team that we have here at Riverside, and we go out and we have to compete with all of the big defense contractors for business, and mm-hmm. We're trying to do that the best way we can.
Uh-huh. How young were you when you were taking things apart and putting them again, trying to figure out how to make things work better?
I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and my grandmother gave me a Christmas gift. It was an electronic toy, and by the afternoon, I had taken it apart to see how it worked and put it back together.
So what's that have to do with your becoming it says here you're the CEO of the Riverside Research Institute.
Right.
What's that have to do with it, taking apart the toy and putting it together and seeing how things work better?
Riverside is a great challenge for me. It's an organization that's been around for 50 years. This is our 50th year, actually, and we are trying to retool the organization to be more competitive, to be at the same time have a deep emphasis on culture, mm-hmm. and that's a tough mix in this industry, and so that challenge is kind of taking the organization apart and trying to put it back together in a way that really matches up with what we need to be today.
Richard?
So Steve, what are the cultural aspects that you're trying to instill that are really most interested to him?
I think work-life balance is important to us, but also things that you can do for employees on the benefit side, on the upward mobility side, learning, training, all of the different things that give employees autonomy to do their job and the benefits that come along with it.
Work-life balance is such an elusive goal for all of us. What is it that you do at Riverside that tries to help encourage your folks to find it?
It is really difficult, and I think that a lot of that is still emerging for us. One of the things that we do is trying to keep an eye out for employees who want to grow and be upwardly mobile in the organization and give them training, and then also to just try to make sure that we're on the lookout for employees who are maybe spending a lot of time at work.
Now, you were saying you grew up with an academic background with your folks, and so, you know, but you're working, running a nonprofit, but this nonprofit, not-for-profit, also is a defense contractor. You know, what do you bring from academia, or how does that relate to running a defense contracting company?
So, my father was a professor of English literature, so I had a lot of exposure early on to, academics, and so I'm an avid reader. I try to look at things very logically and analytically, so I look at different problems that come up. I look at the organization, and it's easy for me to take a step back and look at it from a very logical perspective, and I think I owe a lot of that to my academic background.
Fred? you're clearly very competitive, but you also have that academic background. How does that translate into your home life? What do you instill competitiveness in your children? Do you instill love of learning? How does
love,
it work?
Love of learning, absolutely. It's always been very important. Both my wife and I gave our three daughters as many opportunities as possible academically, but as much freedom to choose their own path as possible. And that's a tough line to walk, but we always encouraged and emphasized the learning, curiosity, and academic side of things.
From your competitive nature, I would assume that you're ambitious. Are you ambitious for your children?
I am ambitious that they be happy and that they find their own path. Otherwise, you know, they're on their own path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Donna?
Well, nonprofit and specifically engineering, I'm curious to know, was there a favorite subject in school, maybe a favorite sport activity?
My favorite subject was always the technical fields, whether it was engineering or science classes early on. I was on the track team in high school, and I found that that was something that gave me an appreciation for teamwork, and one that exists to this day. I you can't do anything by yourself, and how you bring people along as part of the process is extremely important.
What was your effect on that track team?
Well, I didn't have a whole lot of effect on the scoring, but it was a great experience for me, and one that I tried to be very much a part of the team, very much a part of the group, and give everything I had to the team, and that's part of what anybody I think can add to a team endeavor.
What's that have to do with what you're doing nowadays as CEO of Riverside Research Institute?
I think one of the things that's a big challenge for us at Riverside is again trying to make ourselves competitive in a very difficult landscape and have a real effort to be walk the talk of culture, and so for me that is both a competitive thing and a teamwork thing.
So
the teamwork really brings in.
So
really
you're in the technology business.
That's right.
So isn't the key just focusing on better technology?
It's not. It's all about the people. Our customers care who's doing the work for them. They care how that work's being done, and that's something that's important
gotcha.
To me and the entire organization.
Fred?
You come from a family of academics. Your mother was a teacher and your father was a college professor.
That's right.
And yet you end up in engineering. Somebody had to have an influence there. Where did that come from?
I think the academic side, certainly from my dad, and so the fact that I went and got an advanced degree is due to him. Where I picked up the gene for being interested in technology is anyone's guess. It didn't come from either of my parents, as far as I know, so it must be a generation or two behind that.
Donna, what are you thinking?
I'm just curious to know, I mean, engineering and it, that's your thing. What does a guy like that do for fun? I mean, how do we bring fun into our organization? What how do we do that?
What I do for fun is I love to ride my bike and run and keep myself fit. I read all the time, which is another thing that I really enjoy. But I also really deeply enjoy my organization and running Riverside Research and trying to find new ways to engage people, to bring people together, and to get things done. And that for me is incredibly rewarding.
What did you get from Mom? What did you learn from Mom?
My mother was as soon as my family started having kids, that she was a stay-at-home mom, but incredibly hardworking, incredibly high character. And
what do you mean by high character? What are you talking about?
She was just somebody who she was a lifelong learner and very active and very curious. But also somebody who it was evident in almost everything she did, the level of character and her moral fiber was.
You think
was
she had an influence
high.
And you're getting involved with nonprofit versus for profit?
Probably so, because one of the challenges and things that I really look forward to here at Riverside is trying to grow the organization and trying to be an organization that other organizations aspire to be.
Wow. Ooh. Ooh. How are you going to do that?
I think it's all about, it's easy to say it's all about the people, but it really is. And you know, giving people autonomy, giving them as much authority as possible, and all being on the same page from the mission that we're trying to serve.
What's the website address for Riverside Research Institute?
RiversideResearch.org.
We've been speaking with Steve Omick, CEO of Riverside Research Institute, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Back in a moment, right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn, and we'd like to introduce Mike
Kapitanovich,
who is president of LMO. Mike, what is LMO?
LMO is a full-service marketing communications firm located right outside of Washington, D.C.
A full-service marketing and communications firm. Tell me a little bit more about what you do and who you do it for.
We work with our clients on advertising and marketing campaigns to grow their business, grow revenue, capture market share.
Mm-hmm.
Chief business objective.
How large or small is this organization?
62 people.
Uh-huh. And how'd you get this job? How'd you get this gig?
Through acquisition.
So your company got acquired by the mother company, and now somehow you got appointed to be the president of the overall organization.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Where are you from originally?
Rockville, Maryland.
How many brothers and sisters?
One younger sister.
And how young were you when you started making money?
7, 8.
Doing what?
Lawn service.
What'd you do different than all the other kids that had that were mowing lawns?
I think I, in a way, gave it away. So I priced it lower in hopes to scale the business by capture one guy, have him refer out all of his buddies because he knew a guy named Mike that does a really good job, and he only charges $10 when everybody else charges $15.
So you understood the fundamental tenets of marketing at the age of 7 or 8, realizing that if you did a good job and you offered the right kind of price, the business would come to you.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And what was the next step? Didn't you do something around the age of 14 with some photos?
Photos, same thing. So took a lot of photos from friends and family and tried reselling them to others as well.
Give me an example of what you're talking, like give me a photo you would have seen that you would have tried to sell, and how'd you do that?
Maybe a photo that one of my friends took from one of their international travels and paired it up with the buyer.
So if somebody was interested in what Cairo might be like, you would sell them a picture of Cairo.
There you go.
And how old were you when you were doing this?
Early high school, maybe 14, 15.
So you're all about understanding supply and demand and marketing, aren't
sure.
you?
There you go.
Uh-huh. And what kind of sports did you play as a kid?
Played football, volleyball, racquetball.
And what was your favorite sport?
Racquetball.
Why would racquetball be your favorite sport?
Moves quick. It's a quick game.
It moves quick, so you're the kind of guy that understands marketing and likes things to move quickly.
I'm a big subscriber to the 80-20 rule in business.
What's that?
You get enough of the data and input to get us 80% to the decision and go.
Uh-huh. And how old are you now?
32.
And how many businesses have you been involved with?
4 or 5 that I've been an entrepreneur on.
Uh-huh. How many more are you thinking about?
Who knows?
Uh-huh. So I guess the good thing about being an entrepreneur is you get to work your own hours. So you go into the office about 10 o'clock in the afternoon, in the morning, and leave 2 or 3 o'clock and, you know, go bowling or farting around the rest of the day?
I wish. I work probably 18, 20 hours a day, and it's probably the sticking point with my wife.
Well, why do you do that?
It's what I've always known. Ever since I've had a business, it's been you need to work to get deals done, to make sure clients are happy, and it's all I've ever known.
Richard, what are you thinking?
I think that we choose our own to make our own insanity, and so my question is, of all of the choices you make, what gives you the most joy?
Building. I love to build, whether it be building a company, building a team, building a solution, whatever that is, just building and seeing it through.
What are you most excited about building now?
We're going through a pretty big repositioning of the company, going from a predominantly historical federal government market to much more of a corporate composition of clients. So that takes a big challenge to go through culture shifts, revenue composition, dependencies, and everything else. So it's building essentially a new company.
When you were a kid, when did you realize that it wasn't so much about what you were doing as it was selling?
Probably early on. It was. I'm not a. I don't aspire and never aspired to be a maintenance lawn maintenance guy. I've always had the idea, and I still do. I believe work begets work, and it's through referrals and other things. And that's essentially what I did. I discounted my pricing when I was 8 in hopes that one guy talked to his next 3 neighbors, and I scaled the business accordingly.
Matthew, what are you thinking?
I'm just wondering how you got to the marketing side from your education. You had talked earlier about your work with management consulting, and I'd like to hear a little bit about how that sort of dovetailed.
Sure. So when I was in management consulting, I did a lot of federal legislative policy work, and I needed a creative outlet. So during that time, I worked with various startups and knew a few very good designers, and that's ultimately started what was one of my first businesses of a web design company, of basically taking that guy's design work, selling it, finding a new client, selling his work, and then taking a margin off the top. So it was more of a creative outlet, and it just so happened that a lot of the folks that were in my network were designers and marketers, and I learned how to sell those services, speak to them, and take a margin.
Fred?
Where do you get your adrenaline rush from? Is it building up a company, or is it starting it from the ground and then getting it to a point where you can sell it or turn it over to someone else?
It's probably both. I love starting. I love re-engineering. I love growing. It could be everything from building a team to go after a pursuit, building a company from the ground up, or just re-engineering thing. Folks say that I like change, and I'm a catalyst for change, so I just love going into an organization and just...
But you've had a history of building up companies and then selling them and starting something new. And so I wonder, you know, is it really the excitement of getting your feet wet on something you haven't done before, loving the challenge?
Probably that's about right. It's interesting. The last question was, where did you get your marketing chops? And I was a management consulting with no marketing chops, and I just happened to have some marketers in my network, and I learned everything there was.
You learn your marketing with the lawn service when you were getting other people to sell your business for you?
Sure. I guess I wasn't thinking about that when I was 7 or 8. I was just looking to scale a business and make a buck. So, yeah, probably I do have marketing roots all the way back to 8.
LaDonna?
You're a true entrepreneur. Is there someone in your family that you got that skill from?
My mom. My mom's always been an entrepreneur. She's been an entrepreneur as long as I can remember, from when I was an early child.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What does your mom do?
She runs a healthcare consulting and staffing firm.
Okay.
And how young were you when you were helping your mom?
I can't remember. I remember going to work for her when I was probably in middle school. I remember I had the title of a VP of engineering, whatever that meant at the time. But I just remember her working as any entrepreneur was, trying to get their business off the ground when I was early.
How young?
Probably 4 or 5. She had a home office in the basement. Papers were everywhere. Invoices here, QuickBooks there, and just trying to pull it all together before she got her first office space and everything else.
What do you remember about that? What do you remember about thinking about that?
It was cool. She transitioned from a nurse to a business owner, and she believed that there was an opportunity in market for her services. And it was, I think, probably for the last 25, 30 years, I've been surrounded by an entrepreneur that just loves what she does.
Uh-huh. Did your mother mention business ideas to you?
Very rarely.
When you went to start that lawn mowing business, was she aware of it?
Absolutely.
What was her thought about it?
Why not?
How did she help you?
Of course, I needed to go to the local gas station, fill up my gas tanks. So shuffling me around there and...
Is mom still around nowadays?
She is.
Do you talk to her about your business ideas?
Absolutely.
Does she help you?
We exchange ideas back and forth, actually. She's got her own ideas. I've got mine, and it's just interesting entrepreneur background, even though she's my mom and older and in a completely different sector. We share stories. She continues coming to me with ideas, and I go to her. So it's an interesting relationship.
So she comes to you with ideas about your business. You go to her ideas with her about her business.
Or she comes to me with ideas on how to grow hers or market hers or different offshoots to what she could be doing.
Does your dad or your wife participate in any of this?
No, not really.
So they just sit by the sidelines and let the two of you go.
Yeah, my dad's a researcher, a scientist, and my wife's a government contractor, now stay-at-home mom.
Uh-huh. Who's got the next question here?
I want to know if you do the marketing services for your mom's company.
I did for many, many years. Good question. I did for many, many years, and I've recently subscribed to the philosophy of not doing business with close family or friends.
Uh-huh, but I could see how with your marketing mind, you could be quite helpful to your mother.
It's funny, and she hears it from me all the time. I've always asked her about her business, her margins, her staffing composition, and I've always said, why do you have that department if it's not making you any money? Why do you have this person? And it's, in a way, she appreciates the advice from her son, but in a way, she's back off.
Yeah, it's her business. Sure. I understand. It makes sense.
How has your father's background influenced you?
He's very analytical. He's a double PhD from Northwestern. He's into the math and sciences. So he's very even keeled. So from a personality standpoint, even keeled, and then definitely bringing data and quantitative things into decision making. Mm-hmm. It's been
Mike, what's the website address for LMO?
LMO.com.
We've been speaking with Mike
Kapitanovich,
president of LMO here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Jamie Hamelberg, co-managing partner of Press, Dozier & Hamelberg. Jamie, what is Press, Dozier & Hamelberg? What are you guys doing?
We're a general business law firm in Bethesda.
Uh-huh. A general business law firm in Bethesda. Where are you from originally?
I'm from outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
I am the last of six.
So you're the youngest of six.
I am.
And what did mom and dad do for a living?
My dad was a dentist and my mom ran the practice.
Your dad was a dentist, your mom ran the practice, and how young were you when you were helping out your mom and dad?
I must have been 7 or 8 when I started working for them.
And what were you doing for them?
I would sit with my mom at our dining room table, and I would mark off receipts and amounts. I would stand on a stool at a sink, and I would wash dental instruments.
So
I would answer the phone.
You would answer the phone. So how did you feel about doing all that stuff? Your friends are outside playing, and your mom's forcing you to work, and your dad's forcing you to work in the business, in the dental office.
It's just what we did.
Uh-huh. So what was it like around the dinner table?
Around the dinner table, we talked about the practice. It was pretty much all dentistry all the time.
Uh-huh. And what are your brothers and sisters doing nowadays?
Three of them are dentists. Uh-huh. I have a sister who uh-huh. is a teacher and uh-huh. a brother who's a mathematician.
Three of them, half of them ended up as dentists, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. So we were talking earlier, and what struck me was how close the family was. It sounded like you had some pretty close relationships with your brothers and sisters.
There's a 15-year spread between my oldest brother and me, mm-hmm. so... at times it seems like they're almost aunts and uncles. At other times it seems that we're pretty close.
So as opposed to being really competitive with each other, there was a real unity going on there.
There's a unity, but I oftentimes say that as the youngest of six mm-hmm. at the dining room table, I had to make sure that I got my fair share. So,
mm-hmm. Richard?
You know, it's not that birth order is everything, but being the sixth of six kids, you've put yourself in a leadership position in you know, several endeavors. What do you ascribe that?
I think that being the youngest and having there be a 15-year spread, I had to make sure that if I wanted to get fed at the dining room table, that I would have to speak up. And I've kind of used that philosophy all my life, that you need to really speak up and make sure that not only do you get yours, but other people get theirs too.
You know, I really sense a strong sense of justice in you, that you feel the need to make sure that things are just for others. You know, and you know, how does that affected your life?
Well, I have always thought that it was very important to be involved in the community, and I have been very active in my synagogue and also in professional organizations. I'm now the leader of a women's business organization that has 130 members, and I try to make sure that we do good things.
Great, another leadership role. What kind of beneficial things are you doing?
I like to work with a lot of startups, and I am right now doing a workshop at the Maryland Women's Business Center, helping young fledgling business owners start up their business.
Awesome.
LaDonna?
Tell me, did you have additional hobbies as a child? I mean, being the youngest of six and, you know, working in your dad's practice, what else did you do activity-wise for fun?
So with everything being so centered on my father's business, we were pretty focused on the business itself. I didn't come from one of the families where my mom would drive me to different events or activities. So what I would do after school is I would answer the phones and I would do the paperwork, and we all kind of worked together as a family for the business. So I really didn't start to branch out and do other things until later in high school and in college.
Matthew, what are you thinking?
Well, actually, I had a couple things. I first wanted to ask how you went from a little bookkeeper and a family of dentists to a lawyer.
I think I was a disappointment to my family. They had never really even contemplated that there could be a lawyer, and the only thing that they knew about lawyers was always the fear of the malpractice suit. So I think at a certain level, they were very proud, but at another level, they just don't quite get me.
Well, and going back to the women's organization, did you join that for networking or for community?
A little bit of both, but I found that the community has been the most important part of our organization. We actively discourage people who are aggressive marketers, and we instead try to learn from each other, have educational opportunities, and try to grow as business owners together.
So would you say that the women's organization is more educational focused than really networking focused? And would you say that it's been very helpful as a woman owner?
Absolutely. We have mastermind groups where we get together regularly. There are four people in my mastermind group, and we talk to each other about our businesses and try to get brainstorming sessions going back and forth and try to grow as business owners.
Where's this community stuff come from, your background? Where's that fit in?
My family was always involved in helping out at the school, for example, or being a member of a synagogue, and I think I got that from there.
What was your role in all that stuff?
Oh, I would be the youngest one. I would be the one going to the school and pulling weeds. I would have all of the really bad jobs, I think.
Uh-huh. But where's this leadership come from?
I think the leadership was in seeing what my parents did, but also knowing that in this big family, if I was going to be heard, I had to really speak up and play a part.
Uh-huh. So at home, are you married or single?
I am married.
Uh-huh. How many kids do you have?
I have two. I have two daughters.
Uh-huh. What's your husband's first name?
Mark.
Mark. If I asked Mark who wore the pants in the family, what would he tell me?
I like to think he would say that both of us wear the pants in the family.
Why is that important to you?
I believe in fairness. I believe that everyone should play a part and feel valued.
It goes back to what Richard was saying about justice. What's that about justice? Let me have that again. I'm not sure I understand.
Well, the legal field, all of our laws developed in trying to make sure that everyone has a place and that their place is protected and that they can play a role. And I'm a firm believer in that. I think that in any organization, and in our law firm, for example, I think that everyone should be
involved. So what Richard was talking about earlier, he saw a personality trait in you, which is the reason perhaps you're dealing with the world of law. What's the website address for this organization?
We are PressDozierLaw.com.
Let me have the button. Hmm?
PressDozierLaw.com.
We've been speaking with Jamie Hammelberg, co-managing partner of Press Dozier & Hammelberg here on Executive Leaders Radio. We've also had the opportunity of speaking with Matthew Lesko, CEO of Lesko & Walderman, Steve Omick, CEO of Riverside Research Institute, Mike
Kapitanovich,
president of LMO, and most recently Jamie Hammelberg, co-managing partner of Press Dozier & Hammelberg. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, including LaDonna Simon, First Virginia Community Bank, Fred Press, Press Dozier & Hammelberg, and Richard McBride, McBride Real Estate Services, for helping me conduct the interviews, hopefully an educational and entertaining interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and do have a nice day. Bye-bye.